I'm Ellen Mary.
And I'm Michael Perry.
And he's a plant geek.
And she's a plant addict.
And this is the Plant-Based Podcast.
This is more than just a gardening podcast. We'll be exploring the world of plants from every possible angle. We'll be talking about plant-based diets, plant materials and fabrics, the well-being qualities of plants, and giving plenty of gardening tips and tricks.
So we'll be chatting worldwide to companies and individuals that are being creative with plants in new and exciting ways, from fabulous flower crowns to foliage-filled lounges,
botanical moisturizers to bamboo clothing.
It's all here.
And it's all made of plants.
This episode of the Plant-Based Podcast is brought to you by our friends at VeggiePod. Their integrated raised vegetable garden bed kit makes growing vegetables easy for everyone. With self-watering features and protective canopy, with VeggiePod, you'll be harvesting your own produce in no time. Available in three sizes to suit any garden. Visit veggiepod.co.uk and enter PBP10 for a special discount as a PBP subscriber.
Okay, so I'm just going to set the scene for you. It's a gorgeous sunny day, the skies are blue, there's barely a cloud in sight. I'm sitting next to Michael, of course, to my right, and to my left is Peter Goodchild, head of Alpines here at Wisley Gardens, RHS Wisley. And we're sitting on a gorgeous stone bench looking down over water, loads of gorgeous kind of alpine and rockery plants. We can even see some carnivorous plants down by the water. There's people walking around, but it's lovely and peaceful, and you can hear kind of the water all around you, and it's absolutely beautiful. Peter, this is like heaven to me. If I worked here, I honestly think this would be like my dream job, you know.
Does that mean you wouldn't be working?
You are so lucky. No, yeah, probably. Yeah. Anyway, so we are at RHS Wisley, and it is absolutely beautiful. So, yeah, we're going to talk about alpines today, but first off, it would be great to hold on. Oh my gosh!
This is dynamic.
Peter's being called.
Alpine
is
emergency.
Is it like a walkie-talkie?
Yeah, that's my garden radio. Sorry.
are you needed? Is it like, are you being called up for an emergency?
He's been paged to do some repotting.
It's probably my team. They're probably watching a little. And
then, well, you did. We wish we could see you. Where are you? If you are looking.
I'll put it on silent.
It's no problem at all. Oh, that lady's got a lovely umbrella. I wish I had one of those. Peter, I think maybe let's start with just talking about RHS and Wisley and how you got involved and all of that before we get on to alpines and in a little bit more detail. So just kind of introduce yourself to everyone. Tell us what you do here.
Okay, so as I've said, I'm the alpine team leader at RHS Wisley. So I started here 4 years ago. Before that, I was at Legoland, and we would help to design and theme the rides. So they'd put the rides in, and then we would plant up around it. So the plant diversity was quite interesting.
That's really cool.
And then obviously they have Miniland there, which is where the alpines come in. So I always had an interest on kind of small kind of herbaceous plants and alpines. And then we'd help with the kind of landscaping of that as well. So it was really good fun working there. But I got to the point where I really needed to kind of diversify and find kind of my feet in somewhere else. So that's where what brought me to Wisley. Mm-hmm. 4 years ago. And I've kind of loved every minute of it. As you've said, it's such a beautiful kind of landscape to work in. And we'll obviously talk about the alpines later on. It was kind of a bit of a jump into the deep end coming here. Obviously, we had quite a large diversity of plants at Legoland, but nothing on this scale, where every bed over an acre and a half of the rock garden is completely different, and you've got such kind of seasonal interest coming in all the way through. So you'll get to know an area, and then you'll be like, oh, not seen that, that's something new. And it'll be the next week that something new's coming up or coming into flower or a bulb's coming into shoot.
Every week different.
Yeah, so it's a it's a really lovely place to work. It's, and especially for horticulture, it's a great place to learn as well.
I think it's one of the prime locations, I've got to say. I always, when people ask me what my favourite garden is in the UK, I often say Wisley, because you've got so many different pockets and styles of garden in one place.
Yeah.
And it's amazing because you can wander around them all throughout a day and experience all those different styles.
Absolutely. Tell us about some of the other areas here at Wisley.
So we've recently added the exotic garden. So that's to show plants that have an exotic feel to them, which people can leave outside all year round. So they've got lots of the dahlias, the cannas, and the bananas that they kind of leave out all year round.
So
and
they
you
leave
can...
the dahlias out all year round?
So, yeah, a lot of the dahlias they leave out all year round because we've got such high drainage here,
right.
And they'll just cover them with a thick mulch to protect them from the frost.
This is very topical, very topical, because I posted some dahlias only today, I think it was, or maybe last night, from Hyde Hall, RHS Hyde Hall.
Okay.
And then I got into this really big discussion about whether you lift the dahlia tubers or leave them in. And in the past, I've grown dahlias with somewhere probably around about 15 years, and I've usually lifted them, but you still lose some anyway in storage. And I generally, you know, miss some. You know, you don't. I get loads of them, so I leave some in. They always grow. Like, I always mulch and they always grow, sometimes even stronger than the ones I've stored. So this year I'm leaving them all in. I'm going to give them a really thick mulch. My soil is very free draining. It's quite sandy as well, so I'm just going to give them a thick mulch and leave them.
Yeah, I think if you're unless you're really sitting in wet all the way through the winter, as long as you've got that drainage point and it's you don't sit with the heavy frost all the way through winter as well, I think you'll be absolutely fine to leave them in. And this is where the exotic garden comes into its own, because in the winter when you kind of expect it not to be doing much, you can come and see like the kind of winterizing kind of techniques that we use at Wisley.
That's really cool. That's actually,
I think a lot
it?
Of like plants that. In the garden that we often think will die at the end of the season will actually come back the year after. I remember when I was at Thompson and Morgan, we used to trial with Rebecca and Bidens, for example, using them in the second year as well, and it works.
Yeah.
You know, we're just used to seeing some of these plants as annuals that you have to lift, but you don't really need to.
And also,
I call them double annuals sometimes.
Do you?
Yeah, because they come back the next year.
Did you make that up?
That's yeah,
cool.
I did.
That's cool.
One of the marketing phrases I made up during my time at T&M. Yeah.
And actually, we were just saying about seeing the carnivorous plants. So Sarracenia, this is the same thing. They're often sold, aren't they, with houseplants. So people think they have to be kept inside, but actually you just can grow them outside and leave them
They're
outside.
Actually happier outside very often, aren't they?
Yeah. So the Sarracenia that we've got on the rock garden, there are some tender ones from Australia that won't put up with the harsh winters that we get, but a lot of them will put up with the, like, we leave all of the carnivorous bed out all year round. So we also have Nelumbo in there as well, which people kind of think of as a tender lotus. So it's Nelumbo lucifer. So that's the sacred orchid, sacred lotus.
What's the key with that then? Does it just have to be planted deeper, is that right?
Yeah, so they need to stay in at least a foot and a half of water. So if you've got a small pond hasn't got the movement through it, then they will frost and die off.
Okay.
But where we have them on the rock garden, the water's constantly running through them, so the temperature doesn't drop low enough for the rhizomes to be burnt off.
Okay. You can grow lotus in the UK. A lot of people don't realise you can even grow them in the summer in the UK.
Yeah, so, I mean, we saw it when I went over to Bonn in Germany, and they just had them in big black tubs. And they have the same climate as we do. So I was like, well, that's beautiful. We need to grow this on the rock garden. So we bought four rhizomes two years ago, and they've survived the last two winters. So it's really shown that we've got really nice little microclimates across the rock garden, and it's just making the use of those areas. And it's always just trying to learn more about the garden that we look after and kind of using different plants. We've actually grown we're growing Mechanopsis on the rock garden.
Oh, nice.
Wow. And since I've been here, it's always been one of those things that people have said, oh no, it doesn't work, but until you try it and really kind of see if it works for yourself in a different area where you've got those microclimates, it's just having a bit of fun with it.
I think that's real. That's a key point, isn't it? You know, so we can go by the book and the book will say, no, that won't grow. But actually, just give it a go yourself and see. You know, we all have different soils and different, like you said, climatic conditions within gardens. So just give it a go.
Plants
are
living things, you know, they behave, you know, people, we don't all behave the same, do we? So
we know, Michael.
What would be your tips with Mechanopsis, though? Because to me, that really is the holy grail of I'd love to grow one. What were your key tips to success there?
So what we've done on the rock garden, so we found a position that stays cool through the summer, and that's in this weather it's quite tricky, and we've tried to find the coolest spot in the rock garden
hot
at the moment.
It's the hottest day of the year, just so you know.
Yeah, we're just sitting here podcasting. I'm just sweating down my back.
So we found a bit on the rock garden that is right next to a north facing rock, so it stays cool through the summer, but it also has water trickling through it, so it'll stay damp. It shouldn't frost too hard in the winter because it's obviously protected as well from the rocks. So it's just kind of having a bit of a play around with it. And we've always found that this particular pocket, which is in one of the oldest parts of the rock garden, so over 100 years old, has actually kind of got its little microclimate where it's got these big rocks holding the kind of temperature at a kind of medium temperature.
That's really cool, isn't it?
That's really nice, yeah. Can I ask, I want to kind of wind back a bit more, like, in your childhood, were you interested in plants? What did you when you first left school? Did you study landscape, or
So when I left school, it was kind of that typical 15, 16-year-old. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And all my friends went off to university, and I said to my dad, I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to go to university. And he was like, there is no way it's for you. Like, it's
really?
Just not going to be what you want to do. Because I didn't really know what I wanted to do, and I was just following
my
friends.
You just wanted to go because they were going.
Yeah, because my friends were going.
Cool,
yeah, I wanted to be one of those freshers that kind of go out and have more parties than actually learning.
Yeah, that's not studying.
Yeah, so...
It could be seen as studying.
So my dad had a building company, and he set me up on an electrician's course, and I soon found out, being 6 foot as a teenager, and just didn't like going under floorboards and in lofts. So I got talking to the bricklayer, and he would do lots of landscaping jobs after building the houses for my dad, and got involved in the landscaping through that. And when we had done the landscaping for the customers, they needed someone to look after it. So I'd go and work for the customers on that side, because I'd planted all the plants and done all the designing with the bricklayer. So it was a kind of a step into, a really slow step into kind of horticulture in that sense. And then because I was looking after some of the plants that I wasn't too sure about, I'd go and ask my dad and my granddad how to look at and how to prune roses, and then kind of really got an interest through that sense. I mean, it had always been in the background because my mum and dad had big vegetable plots and kind of like nice rose beds and stuff like that, but it wasn't kind of when I was a teenager, it wasn't something that I really kind of jumped into as a career.
It was a cool thing to do then.
Well, it wasn't.
I felt the same, don't worry.
But like, there's so many routes into horticulture, isn't there? That you don't have to go the traditional route. Like, there's so many different ways.
You don't have
ways.
To be going there straight off. Yeah. You know, you've come to it a lot later, which makes it even more fascinating.
It does, and you've learnt skills, you know, with your electrical work, but with your brickwork and landscaping, that you can now bring into horticulture. Like, we're even sitting on a lovely stone bench that you've made, you know, and so there's so many skills out there that you learn before you can even come into the industry.
Yeah, and we're seeing that more and more, where we're having kind of they call it like job changers, where people go and work in the city, or like kind of what I did, that you kind of like, right, that's the direction I need to go because that's where the money is, or that's where my parents are kind of pushing me to. And then they're getting to kind of like the 30s, 40s, and being like, actually, I've got this kind of calling to go and be outside and work around plants. And there's more of the kind of horticultural therapy kind of being spoken about. And I think it's that plus that kind of just natural kind of wanting to get outside and away from the kind of like quite dark or kind of sterile offices that we're kind of becoming more used to.
It's almost like being saturated by like the modern world, isn't it? And you get to a point, like I did, I suppose, in my when I turned 30, it was just like, I don't want to be in this office anymore. I'd always been gardening anyway, and then change career. And we speak to loads of people that have actually done that or have at least kind of had a kind of hobby in gardening because their parents had a vegetable garden or their parents love gardening, and then they kind of rediscover it later on. And I think that happens loads.
But it's also, to me, like, it's a whole bigger question of not being afraid to change. And I think a lot of people in life feel that they have to continue with the first thing they chose in terms of career, even friendships and relationships. You know, I look at life as kind of in blocks. You know, it will change from time to time. You shouldn't be scared of that, because it usually changes for the better. And that is exactly what you've done.
Embrace
you've gone from electrician to working with the Lego people to being here at
but
the
you're
rock
really
garden.
Like, you're it's at racing. RHS Wisley now, so that's pretty cool. Would you ever have imagined that to have happened?
What was it like coming into this environment? Or maybe you didn't even know the place before.
No, so I'd been here a few times and seen pictures of my nan and my granddad here and stuff, and that, so I knew it from being a child and kind of being around and running up and down the rock garden and such, but it wasn't the kind of mecca of horticulture that people see it as. Yeah. So for me, I came in kind of a little bit blind of how big it was. Obviously,
better than.
Yeah, so it took a bit of a pressure off. But as soon as I started, I got here, and people were like, so you realise that this is it's quite a big deal. my manager at Legoland, Paula, she said to me, she was like, you realise, she went for the same job 3 years before, didn't get it, and she was like, if you don't go for this, I'm going to fire you because you're mad. So, because I went back to her after being offered the job by Matthew and said, I'm not sure if it's for me. What do you think? And she was like, you have to. Like, this is massive. Wow. So when I got here, I kind of had a bit of a feeling that it was a bit more than I'd thought of. But also the team very clearly let me know the pressures of becoming a team leader was. So there was pressures, but it's a hard garden not to enjoy being in. And it's that kind of jumping in and learning about the plants and kind of learning how the different habits of the bulb collections that we have is so vast, and learning and working with the team and kind of how they look after those, and like when they go on holiday, what do you do? And it's like, right, okay, well, I need watering routines. And when we have volunteers in and we have to show them how to repot, and it's like, right, how do you handle the bulbs? And it's all the little things that you don't really think of as kind of general gardening when you kind of get into it in a more specialist kind of area like we do with the Alpine collections, it's another world. So it was really fun to kind of jump in and then also see how much it inspires people. We have children running up and down the rock garden every day, and even if it's just the one that just stops and looks at a flower and is like, oh, that's cool, then it's really nice to see. And even if it's like there's another five that are running around on the rocks and kind of trashing everything else.
They're trying to feed their lunch to the Saracen.
Yeah. And they're stuffing it with full of stones and you have to come back and tip it out. You've still got a small percentage that are really enjoying it and getting inspiration from the rock garden and the work that we're doing. So it's kind of getting, and it's kind of a little bit selfish, because obviously it's making you feel good about the work that you've done, seeing people enjoy your work, but it's just kind of you've got to find rewarding areas of your job to enjoy it. So
definitely.
it was cool. It's
I have
nice job.
To just ask, whenever I come to a beautiful garden like this, you never see anyone doing the work. So when do you actually do the work? Like, when do you weed? When do you mow the lawn? Like, you never really see anyone doing that.
Oh, where's his team?
I'll radio
where
my
is
team.
Everybody.
Well, currently my team are hedge cutting and the volunteers are repotting. So
don't believe until we see it.
But they are in there because it's so hot today, they're probably in the shade, but we start at 7:30 in the morning, so that's when we kind of do all the machinery work and kind of all the lawn mowing and getting everything kind of pristine before the visitor comes in. And it's about getting it kind of at its highest point before anyone comes in, so you kind of have that magic kind of feel to it. It's that kind of like Disneyland feel of everything just kind of works. I mean, you go into the Alpine house and we change that over every day, and we'll change about 10 pots every day, but my team will spend 3 hours before you come in at 10 o'clock. They'll start at 7:30, kind of just getting everything prepared so that there aren't any finger marks in the sand, all the flowers are looking their best. We hold 7,500 potted plants behind the scenes, and we bring it, the best pots out to show in the display house. So it's it's kind of putting all that work in, so that when you come in, you don't have people kind of doing all the work around you. You can kind of just enjoy the gardens for what they are.
Yeah.
And if you look hard enough, you will find the gardeners in the beds kind of weeding and kind of getting their head down and it's quite nice, when we're on the rock garden, we'll constantly get asked questions, and it's nice to be approached and have those questions, because I always say to the team and the volunteers, there's never a silly question about plants, and
it's genuine interest.
Absolutely.
So it's nice to be out on the rock garden and have that kind of visitor kind of facing approach. So it's just the kind of the bigger jobs that we do. It's kind of
maybe before
people come in.
Yeah. Well, now I know the answer. I feel very happy. Okay, I think we should go see the alpines, don't you? Let's go
Definitely.
And have a little tour around the alpines and discuss them in a bit more detail.
This episode of the Plant-Based Podcast is brought to you by our friends at VeggiePod. Their integrated raised vegetable garden bed kit makes growing vegetables easy for everyone.
Now, I've seen you in here before, Peter, because you actually starred on BBC Gardeners World in this alpine house, didn't you?
Yeah, thanks for bringing
that
up.
Yeah. But it was great because it brought alpines to the masses. And what people don't realise is they're almost like miniature versions of everyday plants. So if you haven't got as much space, or if you do want to grow in a window box or create a sink garden, then alpines are a great choice. And you're going to give us a bit of a tour and tell us more about the concept of what an alpine really is.
Hold on. Is that a pineapple lily?
Eh?
There's a pineapple lily. Ah, yeah, look at that. Yeah, exactly what you were saying when you just said that.
Ellen, you have become a plant geek. You now get the badge.
Gosh, it's taken a while.
Once you're doing spontaneous squeals of new plants, the year in.
Anyway, yeah, let's walk and talk.
So,
let's
yes,
see
we have eucomus here.
Yeah.
It's like a little eucomus.
So that's part of the South African collection. So here at Wizardy, we kind of hold quite a broad selection of plants from across the world so that we can fill the Alpine House with interest all the way through the year. So I was saying to you guys off mic earlier that about how the team will come in here and spend 3 hours in here each day and kind of making sure that it's looking its best, and how we have like these huge collections. But I think people always kind of have this assumption that alpines aren't really doing their thing outside of the spring, and kind of because they think of like kind of the spring interest of like kind of rock gardens and that kind of like.
Because alpine, what's the definition then? Because it's more than just a rock garden plant.
Yeah,
it?
So it's also not restricted to the alpine mountain regions as well. So it's basically a plant that will grow above the tree line. Mainly kind of small cushioned form that, or kind of low growing kind of shrubs that will put up with the harsh conditions that you find on a mountain region, like with the strong winds, the kind of the deep kind of frosts in the winter. So they have like a huge tap root normally, so that they kind of store their energy in through the winter, and then they'll go through that period of dormancy, especially with the cushions. And then when the defrosts and the snow melts, that will bring them into growth and into flower. So the true alpines that you kind of get in the kind of alpine region have the short interest. But then where we're growing them from across the world, so we have plants from South Africa, from Australia, South America, we're kind of picking up those points of kind of flowering times through the year. So at the moment with the eucomus, they're autumn flowering South African bulbs. And then we have the oxalis. So the oxalis is one of my favourites.
It's lovely, isn't it?
So I was saying about when I first came here and how kind of a big kind of jump into kind of horticulture it was. These flower from now till kind of November. And even later if you continue to water them and feed them. But it was that kind of sign of, like, this used to be my kind of, like, place of calm. Once all the team were out and working, I'd come in here and kind of just enjoy the plants, because you could just kind of take in the detail, and the oxalis just fill this house later on in the year. So they're one of my favourites to see, because it always brings back that kind of, like, fond memory of why I stayed here and why I really enjoy.
Plants always bring, they do bring back memories, don't they? There are certain plants that really make you kind of remember a certain point in your life or a feeling even. It's lovely.
And you've got like the cyclamen purpurescens and the heterofolium, the graecums that all come into flower in the autumn. And then obviously you've got the cyclamen coombe that come into the spring. So it's not just a kind of spring thing of kind of like, right, that's what alpines are. They're kind of that spring interest. And it's, I think people are kind of always kind of really surprised at how well we fill this house with colour and and foliage interest as well. So we have quite a large fern display as well. So we have taking a picture of me.
Michael's taking a picture at the same time, and we're already sweating. I'm holding my hair up, and we're trying to keep this together for you. We're sweltering away.
Story of when some Koreans were trying to film him hoeing. You're not an actor yet.
No. So yeah, it's just having that kind of that low growing form. And if you were to get into alpines and you really like a beginner, I would say the kind of starting block for everyone is a sempervivum. If you can kill a sempervivum, you've done well, because they will put up with most things. And then there's a real kind of joy of seeing them flower and having the offsets that
they
you can
like aliens when they flower. Yeah. So they do. Unexpected,
and they just come out
and because they're monocarpic, people feel that they've killed them after they've flowered and they've seen the best of it. But because they've got their offsets on there, you can pinch those out and plant them onto another pot and give them to your friends or keep them for yourself. So they're a really easy one. And whenever we get work experience students in, it's one of that we kind of like, right, have this to take home with you and go and enjoy it. And like kind of this is a kind of, and it's that kind of giving someone that memory to whenever they look at it, they're like, oh, remember that amazing time we spent on the rock garden with the Alpine team. And hopefully it's kind of that inspiration that will get more people into
That's really, really nice.
But alpines, they're always a lot smaller than the standard version of the plants. Is that because of the more inhospitable conditions they're growing? Because above the tree line, more wind, more kind of...
Yeah,
so they... to cope with, so they don't grow as big.
Well, they've adapted to... So it's the species that they've adapted into kind of the low-growing form. So they're kind of wind-battered. They're kind of... Yeah. They've had to go through the long winters.
So they've evolved to be smaller.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a great example here, because look, this is a Nerine. And usually a Nerine is a big, pink garden plant that grows along the wall of bungalows. There's most old people that
grow them. Really love
Nerines. They've just planted thousands around the new entrance.
That's a beautiful, awesome colour. They're gorgeous.
No, but it's sometimes got that kind of preconception. But this is a dwarf Nerine, which is, you know, half the height. The flower's
it's
half
really
the size as well.
It's
really lovely.
And that's what I love about alpines, is that a lot of the time they're nice, small, delicate plants. One right underneath you, again, a Nerine. But
that's
white
even
one.
Even half the size again.
Yeah, and it's just that. So these are from South Africa, from Table Mountain, and they're kind of really kind of they've just adapted to kind of put up with that kind of blasting wind through them, so they have to be low, otherwise they just get knocked over. And then obviously when they go to seed, the wind will catch them still and spread the seed.
It's incredible how plants evolve, isn't it? You know, they know, they have their coping mechanisms.
Look at that one. I found you a cushion to sit on, Ellen. Or maybe not quite. It's a little bit spiky.
This is a mother of all dianthus, right?
Yeah, people always look at this and they're like, oh, no, you've got the label wrong, because they know what a dianthus
looks
like.
It looks like the dianthus. Yeah,
it looks
exactly.
Like a beanbag.
It's really spiky.
And I do quite enjoy it when children run up to it and put their hands on it thinking it's moss. And then they get this sharp kind of like stick back. But so this is... a dianthus erinaceus, and it's a really kind of typical alpine. It's kind of like it's our centrepiece to the alpine house.
It's about, just to describe, it's about 3 feet across, 2 feet wide and 1 foot tall, and it is a dense mass of stems and leaves. It is incredible.
Yeah, so these are individual rosettes, and they're kind of, this is how they grow. So this is a kind of perfect example of how the wind would hit it and just roll over. And then the snow would just sit on there and it would kind of spread the weight. But also as it kind of going through the kind of summer temperatures, in the night time, the water will hit that and it will catch any bit of moisture in there and roll into the centre. Yeah, so it's so kind of clever. It's got its own little microclimate. And we do find, we had one in the landscape house, which is next door, that it's the kind of perfect catch for kind of cyclamen and any seed kind of rolling across it, and it just creates these little microclimates within the cushion. So then you'll find these odd kind of cyclamen coming up out of it as well. So it's kind of creates its own little world.
That's really cool.
Which is really nice as well.
What else have we got coming over
here? I gotta tell you, rhodohypoxis, there's a lot of these about in the trade recently. There's a few new varieties, a few doubles. They call it little rose lily grass, don't they?
Yeah, so these
are... I've got quite a few of these growing in my little alpine crate. They're very pretty, the lovely pink flowers.
Yeah, so we've got quite a large collection of these. And they're, again, from South Africa, really good plant. And they're great if you've got good draining soil. We've got them on the rock garden. We used to cover these up, and we moved the bed that they were in, so we moved them so they were a bit of, on a ledge so that children didn't run across them. Mm-hmm. And where we had left some uncovered from the move, we'd left them over the winter and they were flowering perfectly well without the cover. So now we don't cover them over in the winter, and they actually enjoy that kind of like the dampness around them. As long as they've got the drainage and they don't sit in like kind of solid wet, then they're perfect for a garden or kind of to add to that kind of late summer interest.
So again, kind of learning as you go as well, realising there's different ways to care for plants outside of the textbooks.
That's one of the things, it's kind of that misconception that because we work at RHS, we know everything, and we're always developing and learning new skills, and kind of it will always be updated. And because of the climate's always changing and kind of getting warmer or getting colder in the winter, it's just kind of adapting how we work around it and kind of what we can add to it for new interests.
Okay, I've got a question there then, kind of like in terms of RHS, say if you were here growing a rhodohypoxis and you realised that it needed slightly different conditions to what was printed in RHS books, how would you go about that? Like, because would you then instigate a change somewhere down the line?
So when they kind of do... We work with the teams in the science teams as well quite closely, so they're constantly doing research on how we're looking after our collections.
To get the best advice.
And if the advice teams... Like, so when you... If you're an RHS member, you can write in for advice and use the advisory team. If they've got something that's quite specialist, they'll always contact myself or the team to kind of get the kind of most up-to-date knowledge so that they're not kind of being misled. And obviously, we're in the south of England. We're kind of in this kind of like little microclimate of its own. It's quite dry through the winter. So we're quite lucky to be able to grow the plants that we do on the rock garden. But I think it's just getting out there and just trying out a few places on your garden or on a pot and just moving them into different sections of the garden.
So what kind of tips have you got for listeners? If they want to kind of start their own rock garden or start to grow alpines, what's the best way to go about it?
So if you want to grow alpines, what I would say, the one thing to go away with, and I've kind of mentioned it a few times at the moment, like today, is that drainage is key. Alpines don't want to sit wet and they don't want to kind of be kind of in this kind of sodden environment, but one thing that they do want to do is have a kind of cool root system. So what we do, and we've put up a few pictures as well, but they want to have the pots in a plunge, or kind of have so that you can keep the sand around the pot damp. So then that keeps the roots cool.
That's exactly what you're doing.
That makes sense.
So then if you're thinking about... So you're basically replicating what we're going on in nature. So they would be growing in between two rocks quite deep down in the ground. So their taproot would be in between these cool rocks. So what we're doing is keeping the sand plunge damp. So it looks quite dry on the top, but an inch down, it's actually really wet. Well, not really wet, but it's kind of damp. So it's nice and cool through these summers. So it's keeping the taproot nice and cool and the root systems nice and cool, so the bulbs aren't drying out or the root systems aren't drying out. So that's the kind of main thing. If you're growing a rock garden, well, building a rock garden of your own, there's all sorts of rules and kind of making sure that it's kind of looks natural and you've got those kind of steps so that it's kind of all the rocks are kind of facing in the same kind of topography, so that it doesn't look like you just
tipped
a load of rocks.
80s rock garden. Yeah.
And I think it's just making sure that it's natural, but also workable. Uh-huh. You need to be able to access it.
Yeah.
So you need to have roots through it, so you're not kind of just chucking all the rocks down and you can't actually weed it when you do have weeds. Like any garden, really, you need to have access points for it to make sure that it's kind of maintainable. Mm-hmm. And then kind of going back to like the alpine collections, what we tend to do, because the alpines are kind of, the bulbs mainly are quite kind of prone to rotting off, we check them each year, so repot them, put fresh soil in, and kind of make sure that they've got a lot of drainage around them, because as you're watering, it will separate the soil from the grit, so you'll end up with this line through the pot if you leave them over like 5 years or so. So we tend to repot them every year or every other year, just to make sure, one, the bulbs are in good health, but also to kind of freshen up the soil, make sure it's not kind of drying out too much. Okay. Otherwise,
it's a really deep drainage.
Yeah, drainage.
Drainage is absolutely key.
Yeah.
And what about the best starter plants? Like, I think you always, like, dianthus is always one that ends up in an alpine garden, isn't it?
Yeah, I think for like rock gardens. So there's this kind of idea that you have to grow alpines on a rock garden, and it's not always the way. You can have kind of low growing herbaceous plants, so like helianthemums, erigeron. You can always grow. It's having the right plants in the right place, making sure that it's kind of, and kind of like low growing, so you've still got that feel of like an alpine kind of scenery that you're creating.
Rosemary,
and it's just like over the rocks is lovely, and sempervivums and saxifrage, like in between all the rocks, is really nice.
You don't like saxifrage, did you tell me that?
You really like saxifrage. No, I do like more choice ones. I like self-sized seedling.
Okay.
It's a nice one with the bicolour flower. We used to sell that was all white, almost like bridal white as well. That was nice, but of course they need to be kind of really almost like vertical.
Yeah, so that's where it's perfect to, like, when if you're building a rock garden, having where the two rocks meet, and you're always going to end up with a small crack in between. You can pack these in between, so they're on their side and kind of like growing down the cracks, and they'll end up spreading across. And I think it's just, you're not always going to please everyone with the plants that you grow. And we found that out at Wisley, that people will come and criticise, and then the same day you'll have a group and they'll love that area that you've planted up. And it's just
finding...
But it's just finding the plants that are right for you and that you can go and enjoy. You said about loving erigeron. Some of them are quite invasive, so if you can get out there and weed out the seedlings, then great, that's fine. But
some
also
of them pretty but bossy.
They are.
Just like you. Hello.
Note my silence. I'm actually faint. I can't talk anymore. I'm so hot. I'm literally unable to function.
Actually, the second part of this little mini tour, we're going to go actually behind the scenes, and we're going to look at the plants that are brought into this main alpine house. So we'll get to see some real treats behind there. Let's go.
Okay, we're behind the scenes now.
But only quickly, because you're moaning about being hot
time. Outside here, you get a bit of a breeze, but when you walk inside with the fans off so that we can record, it's a bit stifling. But anyway, yes, we're behind the scenes, so this is where it all happens, where people don't see what goes on. So what goes on here? What do you do?
So this is where we store our plants ready for presentation. So they spend the majority of their lives in these sand plunges. So the pots are plunged into the sand, as I said, to keep the roots cool, either whilst they're in growth or, as I said, about the bulbs, to make sure that there's still some moisture around the bulbs, but they're still kind of like, they're not sitting wet, but kind of staying cool.
Yeah.
So we're currently looking at what's called the Elliott House, and this is where we kind of store our kind of more choice plants and also our cushion plants. So what we were saying about our, like, what an alpine looks like, this is kind of like the prime example of where to come to, really.
I got told off for touching one, but I just get up close and personal with the plants. I'm just fascinated.
You didn't just touch it, you pushed it into it.
It was that cushion there, which is a gypsophila, right?
Yeah,
gypsophila. Oh!
Michael's dropped his phone. Everything stopped. Michael's dropped his phone.
So yeah, look at that.
So yeah, this is the Gypsophila arteroides. So it's, as I said, about the kind of small kind of rosettes. So this is kind of microscopic kind of rosettes.
Ellen, look at this.
And it's just
amazing.
A kind of, it's about 30 centimetres wide by about 15 centimetres tall.
But each little leaf is so a millimetre across.
Yeah, so you've got these rosettes, and when it flowers, that will flower across. So each rosette should flower. On a good year, it will flower like as a whole kind of bowl, and it will look like a big ice cream, basically.
That's amazing. It really is stunning.
Sheesh, that is just...
So we've got a few of these, and the size of the rosettes on the Gypsophila will also depend on how much we water it. So we've got one of the same species there with slightly larger rosettes around the edge, and that's where you can see where the water we've watered it a little bit more.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So the rosettes have grown a little bit bigger. But it's still very small. They kind of look like small hills and kind of mountain tops.
It's like a mini mountain range. It really is.
Imagine little kind of stories on there. Like, I want to live on there.
But this is where, like, when we have children come through and kind of like the work experience students, kind of really can grab their imagination of like how fun it would be to work here, like working around these kind of like really interesting plants and plants that you wouldn't just kind of. Like you wouldn't find anywhere else. There's a few gardens in the country that grow these plants like we do. So we're quite kind of well, we're pleased with what we do, but we're also very kind of, I don't know, it's just a real joy to work around.
I can tell. I can tell that you love it here, and it's clear like your knowledge and passion comes through entirely, and it's absolutely awesome. So this one here, Peter, you on this? It looks kind of funky.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
So again, so what we were saying about the kind of small growing kind of alpine form. So this is Euromus japonicus, and it's a really low growing. Euromus, and it's quite compact. When we repot these, we will kind of do a bit of kind of light pruning on the roots, so it's slightly bonsai'd in that sense, but where it would be growing is in these kind of like tight rocks in between, so it would be constricted anyway by the rocks. We do the root pruning so that we can keep it in a kind of the same size pot, because otherwise we'd end up with these huge roots and a kind of small plant. And
so it's used to that because it's used to being in restricted environment.
Yeah,
well.
So we need to kind of restrict the roots and the size so that we can actually go out and display it in the display house, because otherwise it would just take up too much room. We wouldn't be able to lift it, but also we wouldn't have the space for it as well. So,
So what's in over there? I can see tons and tons of bulbs. So, what's going on over there?
So in our larger display, larger collection house, we've got our Narcissus collections, our National Crocus collection. We've got Iris, we've got the Louisia collection, which is quite large, and some of them are really large Louisias. But then also we've got a rather large saxifrage collection, which I know that you're not too keen on saxifrage, so I thought we could go and have a look at those, because they're the kind of more mound-forming plants that we've got.
Cool.
And we've adapted the frame that they're in so that it's kind of getting a lot of shade. We keep the plunge cool that they're in, but it just means that we can kind of have that kind of added interest. And we've been working with Cambridge Botanical Gardens on how we look after them, and one of my team, Tom, who looks after this collection, has been doing a wonderful job making sure that they kind of put up with the changing environment that we have. So we've got quite a broad collection. So we've got the mossy saxifrages here.
Yeah, they're the ones I don't like, don't they? Look a bit messy.
And I think that's the thing that people have
this time of year, but yeah. Give them a chance.
Kind of, they have this browning off and they'll go green on sides.
Yeah.
But then we have the more kind of mound forming ones, which I really enjoy. And again, they're kind of similar to like the dianthus that we've looked at in the display house, with their kind of cushion form. And we've grown them around bits of tufa as well, because that's what they'd naturally be growing around.
Okay.
I was going to say, they look like little mountain ranges. They look like they are kind of out there, don't they?
So it's just trying to create these kind of natural displays so that we can show people how, like, if you do end up with these dead bits that you're poking again.
Yeah.
Luckily that bit was dead. But we show people what you can kind of, if you can cut them out carefully, and you can replace it with these bits of rock just to fill it, so you've still got a nice display.
Okay.
And it's just having those kind of we have to have, like as I said before, it's just filling the display house every day,
continuously
basically.
Changing it.
Yeah, we don't have a quiet day at Wisley, so it's always trying to grab the public's attention. So we're trying to find new things that we can do.
Who gets to choose them though? You, or you choose as a team? Because that must be a really fun part of it.
I think it's one of the best jobs. The students do it as well. So when the students are on a rotation round the garden, and when they come onto Alpine, we give them the opportunity to basically look after the display for a week, so they get to kind of choose the plants, and that means that they get to work around the plants and get to learn their names and look after the plants, like, kind of on a one-to-one basis. And also the team, when we don't have students, will do it, so they're on a rota, so we look after, like, on morning duties, like I said before, about getting the garden and the display house looking its best. The team will work on a rota, so that they spend a week looking after the display house. And you can always tell who's doing the display, because they'll tend to pick their own plants that they look after, so that it's kind of making their own kind of identity and their own plants kind of stand out.
That's cool.
Just quickly then, behind us, we've got this massive bench of cyclamen. How many have you got here?
There's about 300 pots of cyclamen. So these are the kind of hardy cyclamen that we have, so mainly Heterofolium. But then we also have the tender cyclamen house as well, which have Africanum. Right. And we've got some really kind of real showy Africanums as well, with like huge leaves, which I know the local groups love. So we said about having displays in the collection house, but we also go to shows as well and kind of support the local gardening groups as well. So it's a nice kind of...
I love it.
What a cool place to be. Mm. It's just ace, isn't
it's
it?
It's like a plant world, but in miniature.
It is. You know, like Legoland? Yeah. Could it not be like mini plant land or something?
Yeah. I think you brought a bit of Legoland here.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
You've got your perspectives all mixed up, Pete.
Thank you very much for... you know, being here with us this afternoon, taking the time out. It's been really cool.
Absolute pleasure.
Not quite cool, but cool. You know. Hey, MP.
Okay, the press record, okay?
We're on record.
Good. I'm making a vegetarian chili because I'm a vegan now, Alan.
You've suddenly turned vegan. You actually just said you were making a vegetarian curry, which is slightly different, because dairy in it.
Don't catch me out on the loopholes all the time. Honestly, I'm making an effort. I've just chopped red onion.
Yeah.
I'm about to go with a yellow pepper, green pepper, and loads of beans, because I love beans.
Nice. It sounds very good. You're a better cook than me, then, for sure.
I'm all what?
A better cook than me.
Oh, I know. But the thing is with you, Ellen, I never get it, because on the surface you look as if you'd be a good cook. Like, everything suggests, like, this girl can really cook, but then you come down to it and it's like, you really can't.
I've got, like, do you know, my Webb even said to me that it's been very unfortunate the days that I've cooked for you, it's turned out really badly.
Like, for me?
Yeah, when you've been here and I have made us food,
it's
never really been that great. But I can cook. I'm better at baking than cooking, but I can cook, believe me. Anyway.
How did you get on with your, didn't you do some live cookery demos?
Yeah, I done cookery demo at the Handmade Festival, and it went really, really well. I really enjoyed
it. Were you having a good cooking day there?
I was having a good 3 cooking days there. You're so cheeky. I know also that Michael was invited to a party, and it would appear that he thought the party was at my house. So he was kind
of a little
bit like, you know, I don't know if I can make it or not. And then when I told him that we were eating out and going for cocktails, all of a sudden he was more interested.
I just realised what story you're telling me, which is being random.
So clearly Michael doesn't like my cooking, but it's not that bad, I promise.
Yeah, but I also wanted to see the guest list first, you know?
Well, I'm not going to show you the guest list. It's a surprise.
But you know what? I'm quite an instinctive cook, so I just kind of do it as I go along.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean it's always a success, but it means that I kind of, like, if it goes wrong, I can, like, mop it up halfway.
Yeah, that's how you learn, though, I guess, as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so.
So just to put everyone in the picture, currently, because we're both around and about and travelling and whatnot. Yeah. We're recording this gossip via Skype. And
yeah, we are, because we're Flash.
I'm watching Michael in a kitchen making a chilli, and he's watching me in my office.
Oh, my peppers are frying. I hope they're not too noisy.
Repotting houseplants.
I've got noisy peppers.
I'm
going to step outside for a minute.
Oh, my goodness. And all I can see is your beard as well on the screen.
I know. Sorry.
So, yeah, busy bees.
Yeah, carry on. We need to talk about something sensible.
Well, we've just done this lovely podcast, haven't we, with Peter Goodchild.
And what's it about?
It's all about... How do you mean, what's it about? All about alpines at RHS Wisley.
Oh, so they're small plants.
You're very funny, Michael.
Sorry, they're really basic terms. They're like plants for people that can't cope with anything bigger.
Oh, gosh. If that's what you make of alpines, then yes, of course. But no, alpines are lovely plants. Yeah. And the alpine houses at Wisley are fabulous, aren't they? So nice.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We had a right old dig around the back, didn't we, darling?
We had a good old dig around the back, yeah.
And remember what happened as well?
What happened?
Do you remember we had one of our first public arguments?
Did we? Did we?
Do you remember?
What do you mean a public argument?
It was so awkward.
What happened?
You really peeved me off. I get told off for saying swear words in this podcast too much. Our editor has to bleep them everywhere. But yeah, do you remember? What happened, Ellen?
I finished...
You're being pretty but bossy.
I finished a podcast recording sooner than Michael would have liked. And so when I stopped recording, Michael was like, oh, you finished it too soon. I don't like that. I'm not happy about that.
What was it?
Yes, you did. That's exactly what you said.
Well, of course. And it's sometimes really hard in English culture. You can't really say what you mean. So it's like it always comes across aggressive, even when it's just putting your opinion across.
Yeah, but that was fine. And so I just said, okay, well, you know.
I don't want to argue about it again.
And so we just recorded more. So it was no problem.
The tone of your fine.
It was no problem, Michael. You're making a great big drama out of nothing.
Wow. Whatever.
Anyway, yes. It was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was actually. We learnt a lot. It's great because there's like alpines of almost every plant. There's kind of a smaller version, and they're the plants that have obviously kind of grown up on mountainsides, kind of like higher altitudes as well. So they kind of physically almost can't grow as big. So when you want to grow those in the garden, they're immediately more space saving. They need a little bit more care in terms of drainage and all that jazz. But yeah, it's kind of fun. I think alpines can be the...
Well, Michael's just cut out then. I didn't press stop, honestly. But you just cut out then, Michael, sorry. You just said alpines could be the new...
Oh, I just said loads of interesting stuff.
No, it stopped just after you said alpines could be the new... You've forgotten what you said.
Alpines could be the next big succulent.
That's it. I think, in the past, generally, when you think of planting up something to do with alpines, you think of dianthus, don't you? That kind of thing. But actually, there's so many other species of plants that you get in miniature form.
I think some of the first outdoor plants I bought were actually alpines. I think, when I was a kid, I just liked how kind of small and cute they looked. I remember having some small mimulus, some little hypericum as well.
So cute.
Yeah, it was kind of where I started as well, to be honest.
It's a good place to start, and it's pretty trendy. At the moment, Michael's just showing me his nose and eye really close up.
Oh, I was just inspecting my face in the mirror. I forgot you were there.
Yeah, I can see up your nose. That's just
quite a few grey hairs.
Not really a good look. Thank you for that. Anyway, yes, so we had a really lovely trip. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Peter was a fabulous host. So if you do get the chance to go and look around RHS Wisley, do not miss out on the Alpine houses.
And do not miss out on Peter. He's very tall, so you probably won't.
You won't miss Peter, yeah. He's a great guy.
Oh, it really annoys me when I meet people that are taller than me.
Really?
It's like, this is my thing.
Yeah, it really annoys me when I meet people smaller than me.
That can't be often.
Anyway, it's very nice chatting to you. Now you're doing the plant geek pose on the stairs, probably taking a photograph of us.
A common place for me to be. So yeah, I'm kind of like trying to have a few days relaxing, but it's really frustrating. I just want to fly away. No, not really. But yeah, just picking up on loads of admin and stuff. But I came back to the house on, what was it, Tuesday morning. I haven't actually left the house since then, and it's now Thursday morning.
That's terrible. You'll have cabin fever. You'll have cabin fever.
But, you know, I it's good for me as well. You know, I can never quite understand what to do for the best, because, like, you're saying I should go out, but then, like, on the same token, people are like, oh, you need to chill and relax, you know, so I don't know.
But you can chill and relax by just going for a walk. You don't have to actually be doing anything, you know, just get out of the house, get some air.
Yeah, I'm going for a walk later. I need to get a haircut, so.
Okay. Yeah. So it doesn't have to involve work, does it? Hey,
no.
Actually, this week that we're recording this gossip is Hug a Tree Week. So you can go and hug a tree and post a photograph, please.
Oh, yeah. Racy.
Do that.
Can I hug an indoor tree because of my rule of not leaving the house?
No, you need to hug an outside tree.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah.
How's my chili doing? I've actually got you in the fridge now.
Basically having a tour.
Do you think a harissa paste will do the same job? Sure.
I don't know. Mm. I've got no idea because apparently I can't.
Well, I ordered so much from Ocado, 7 types of kale. It's a dream.
7 types of kale?
Yeah, well, actually 2, but it's better for the headlines if I say 7.
This is how things go with Michael.
Forever to soften.
Okay, I think it's time for you to carry on with your chili baking, and I'm going to get on with repotting my little houseplant.
Like, don't make out like I'm like being distracted. You're actually potting up a monstera as we speak.
I am potting up loads of different
plants. Gone are the days of being devoted to each other. You know, without distraction.
We don't love each other anymore. You don't forget though, you are going to be at my house sitting very soon, so you're going to be in charge of my house.
I'm excited.
Plants.
What do I need to do? I bet you're going to leave me a bossy list.
I'm going to leave you a list. Yep. A little
cool.
List. But really, there's not much. I just really like you to water my house plants and in the garden if needed.
Yeah.
Thank
okay.
You. That's it.
That's cool. I will do. Yeah.
Thank you so
I'm
much.
Excited.
Yay.
It's an annoying house because it's 4 floors and you always forget something on the floor above.
That's true.
But it's good for my fitness, you know. I won't need to leave the house. I'll just be fit going up and down the damn stairs.
Every day I feel like I've done a step class, so that's how it goes here.
No. It's awful.
Okay, peeps. Nice chatting.
Right, signing off. We're going to find a way to soften these peppers.
Go and grow some alpines.
Uh-huh. Okay, love you lots.
Oh, you do love me. See? It's all in jest. Laters.
Today's podcast partner is VeggiePod, the integrated all-in-one garden bed suitable for anyone interested in growing your own. You'll be amazed at how quickly your vegetables grow in a VeggiePod. And as a special offer for our listeners, VeggiePod are offering PPP subscribers 10% off any sized VeggiePod when purchased with a stand or a trolley. Simply go to veggiepod.co.uk and enter PBP10 on checkout.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Plant Based Podcast.
Have a browse of the rest of the library or hop on over to the website, which is theplantbasedpodcast.net.
You'll also find our social media links. Please connect with us and let us know about any plant-based projects that you think we should be covering on the show.
And make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you'll be the first to hear the next episode. We're releasing once a fortnight. So until next time, enjoy the world of plants.